countrywide on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Caller Gas, celebrating 80 years, bringing energy to Ireland's homes and businesses.
But first, we're coming close to the peak of the dairy calving season, and over the coming 5 or 6 weeks, tens of thousands of calves will be born every day on farms across the country. It marks the busiest time of the year for dairy farmers. And I've come to one such farm here in Cluck in Ballacolla in County Leash. Paul Hyland milks his cows here in partnership with his brother David. And it's all hands on deck here, like it is on dairy farms right across the land. So let's head into the calf shed to see what's going on in there. Paul, good morning.
Morning, David.
How are you?
You're welcome to Bordwell. How are you keeping?
Very good, and a lovely morning it is too.
It is beautiful, yeah.
Well, it's a busy time of the year here for you, is it?
Oh, it is, yeah. I never needed help better. You're just after arriving here, just in time to give me a hand to finish off feeding the calves here.
Right. How old are these guys here?
These would be all born in the last 2 weeks. They're probably between 5 to 9 days old.
We'll move outside and we'll leave them in a little bit of peace for the minute. What happens to the calves? I mean, you're going to have 50-50.
Yeah, well, look, our day, just to start with, our day is made up of, we get up in the morning, check what has calved during the evening, or for the last, we see them every kind of 4 hours. And the reason for the 4 hours is very important, because that's the time to get the colostrum into the calf. And the transfer of antibodies is most effective in that first 4 hours. Mm. So regardless of gender, regardless of anything, we every calf gets treated the very same. And it's a matter of then getting the cow into the milking parlour, getting the calf into a little nursery that we start them off in groups of tens, and then they come into bigger sheds like this after a while once they get up and running. It's that lovely thing of the spring. It's just the lovely thing of the spring. I just love seeing cows calving. Yeah. I actually love, this is my favourite time of the year. It's just, it is a miracle. It's fantastic to see it every time. And you are right. There is a difference between a heifer and a bull on a dairy farm. The heifer is the next, is the heifer, I'm looking forward to that heifer calving in 2 years from now again. The bull calf, I don't do beef here, but we have customers for bull calves who do beef, so that's where they're destined to go.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is because there's been some talk recently that this year is going to be a record year for births, right around the country, maybe 1.5 million calves. Yeah. So then divide that in two, what happens to the bull calves? And there's been talk about euthanasia and about them being worthless and about farmers getting rid of them in the most inhumane sort of way. Have you heard that? And is that actually happening on some farms?
I've heard it, and I'd say it's from the same sources as yourself, and all I'm hearing is rumour. And
Ned O'Keefe talked about it at the ICMSA.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to personalise it by anybody, but what I would say is, if any person is aware of any welfare issues on any farm, they should report it. It's as simple as that. We have very robust rules and laws in the EU and in Ireland. We have a very efficient Department of Agriculture who will act on it, and I'm sure they'd like to hear about it.
But can you see how people, including farmers, would be upset to hear reports of welfare abuse of young calves?
Of course I would. So look, Damien, I've been following my father around since I could walk around the yard. And we've been taught from the very beginning, we had sheep here one time. You know, every lamb, every calf, every animal matters here. Every dog, cat, they all matter. And we've been taught that since we were, I think it's in our DNA to realise that. As a farmer myself, and I don't know of any farmers who could condone or be happy with any abuse that would happen on a farm. Yeah. And I know we're using the word abuse a lot, but we keep using that word because other people are using it. And sometimes it's a handy throwaway for people with agendas that maybe have something else to say and probably aren't courageous enough to say it.
What about sex semen? Why has that not taken off? In other words, to increase the possibility of your cow having a female calf rather than a bull calf, wouldn't that be better all round for everybody, including the beef farmers who are in competition, obviously, with the lower quality bull calves?
It has a way to go yet. It has a way to go yet, Damien. We don't have a lab on the island for a start, and I think that would be the first start. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're going to take this seriously, we need to fund a lab. It's not a cheap technology. However, it does work. Now, we on the farm here were involved in a couple of trials. Didn't work so well here, but I know people who are using it and are very, very successful with it. But it doesn't take away, you have all these heifers born in February, so that means that every calf, March and April, is going to be for sale. I think a lot of it is to do with the sheer amount of numbers that are arriving on the ground at the same time. A little bit of patience maybe for the likes of myself or ourselves here. Just be prepared to keep the calf a week longer. The real crunch time is the kind of middle 2 weeks of March. That's when all the calves come together. All the calves being born now, ready to go, and people are under pressure and there's a lot of work going on. And I think that's just, we need to have a little think about that end of it.
Well, we're back in here in the calf shed. Just going back to the abolition of milk quotas and I suppose the increase in the dairy herd, we do know obviously of the impact that is having on the environment, I suppose, from increased fertiliser use and methane emissions and all of that. How do you mitigate against that? Or what's your opinion on that charge, particularly being focused and aimed at the dairy sector?
Here we have boundaries, we have all our waterways fenced off. We have removed no hedges here. All our hedges are maintained every year, they're looked after. There's the beauty of hedges here, the beauty of hedgerows here, as they say, they're a corridor for wildlife. Wildlife can travel immeasurable distance in any county, in any parish, in any town stand because of hedgerows. We wouldn't be taking, in fact, we would do some planting ourselves every year to that. But that's aesthetic. We like doing that. We're very proud of what we do. We're very proud of the way we do it. You know, the control of farmyard pollution, that wasn't an issue 30 years ago. Whereas today it's a very real issue. And you take the younger generation of farmers coming along, they do not want to be the one who's found to be polluting. And if you are polluting, you will be found to be polluting. That's for sure.
Do you think you're getting, an unfair whack in the whole climate discussion and debate?
It probably feels that way. But I mean, people have very strong views on it, although the recent election mightn't suggest so. But I do think that people expect a certain standard from people operating. It is our job to make sure that the countryside we have today goes to the next generation in as good and hopefully a better condition than it's in today. We have made mistakes. There is no doubt we have made mistakes. But there are new technologies here. For instance, we do a lot of soil sampling here. We have a nutrient management plan. We would use, the latest development is protected urea. It stops the ammonia getting up into the atmosphere when you spread urea, just to put it in layman's terms. We would use, so any new technology, we wouldn't spread fertilizer without using a soil thermometer first. You know, there are simple things. You can't just say, get up this morning, it's piddling rain, and say, well, I'm spreading fertilizer today, I'm spreading slurry today. That doesn't work anymore.
Paul, thank you so much, and the very best of luck to you, and thanks for chatting to us on the programme.
Thank you very much, Damien. Pleasure having you.
Cheerio. Thanks a mil. And that was County Laois dairy farmer Paul Hyland. And later in the programme, we'll also be joined by the president of the ICMSA, Pat McCormick, to discuss all matters dairy farming and issues regarding animal welfare and the environment as well. Now, Storm Dennis, I believe, is expected to make its presence felt in some parts of the country today as it heads north with gales and rain. And that means that there's flooding concerns in different parts of the country. Not good news for tillage farmers in particular, looking to have that opportunity to plough or sow new crops. Now, John Spink is head of Environment, Crops and Land at Chagask, and he is here in studio with me. You had your National Tillage Conference recently. Good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Damien.
What was the road like from Carlow this morning, all right?
Oh, it was grand this morning. I'm not sure what it would be like going home, but it was grand coming up.
And so, what is the recent weather and the couple of storms that we've had? What impact is that having on tillage farmers?
Well, I suppose we need to go back a little bit further than that. Normally, we'd plant about half of our crops in the autumn and half in the spring. Obviously, last autumn, after the ploughing, it turned very wet. There's probably only about half of the crop that we would normally plant in the autumn planted.
Really?
Now, obviously, it turned drier over the winter and farmers took the opportunity to continue drilling through the winter, so we're not entirely sure how much of that's going to be good, whether some of it will need to be replanted. But there's probably half as much again as normal to be planted this spring.
So no crop sown means no income for farmers?
Yes, no yield. Obviously, they've got the opportunity now to replant in the spring, but there's half as much work as normal to do again.
How many tillage farmers are there in the country? About 6,000 or so?
About 6,000, right. And probably 1,500 of those would be, you know, big
Yes.
You know, sort of full time tillage farmers, yeah.
So that's a lot of pressure, isn't it? If you can't, you're looking out at the rain and you can't get out to make a living in terms of sowing crops, you know, to benefit and reap the benefit of it later in the summer.
Yeah, and certainly up until, say, a week ago, people had, you know, things looked good. Land was beginning to dry up. People were beginning to make a start with ploughing and a bit of planting, maybe a very early spring barley. But Ciara put a stop to that, and Dennis isn't going to help for the next week or two.
Amazing. And what about seed? Did I hear that there's a shortage in seed?
Well, yeah, there is a shortage in seed because obviously the wet autumn is not just an Irish phenomenon. There was a lot of flooding in the UK and across northwestern Europe. So there's a lot of autumn crop that wasn't planted. So big demand, increase in demand for spring crop. And obviously we only produce a certain amount of seed every year. So I believe we're bringing in wheat seed from Poland and all sorts of places.
And obviously it's more expensive then.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, there's big costs to bring in seed from that distance, yeah.
Yeah. Now, in order to grow crops, pesticides, insecticides and fungicides need to be applied. We know it's a contentious area. Take glyphosate, Seth, for example, very much in the news, very much in the spotlight, very controversial. Is there a lot of misinformation out there? What is the situation with regards to the use of glyphosate?
I think there is a lot of misinformation. I guess with, you know, obviously glyphosate is very contentious. It's actually, if you look at its toxicological profile, it's actually a very safe chemical.
It's not banned now at the moment.
It's not banned. No, its approval was renewed for 5 years.
Yes.
And it's coming up again in a couple of years' time. And I think it probably...
When you say it's not toxic, though, weren't there cases taken, you know, by people who claimed that they were getting cancer because of their exposure to it?
In the States, there were, and there have been a huge number of, studies into glyphosate. One of those said it was probably carcinogenic, but every other study has said it isn't.
Right.
Now, there have been some cases brought in the States where the juries have decided that to award... the claimants.
Yes.
But generally speaking, experts in the area would say glyphosate is a relatively safe product.
But it's not banned in Europe, although it's up for renewal and review next year.
It's up for renewal and review, yes, I think 21.
Is it possible to grow crops commercially, tillage crops commercially in this country without ever spraying anything on it? This would be obviously the ideal scenario where, you know, you can grow crops without ever having to use a spray. Is that possible?
It is possible to grow a crop, but there would be a huge reduction in yield.
Right.
And obviously then you would need a big increase in the price. And European farmers, not just Irish farmers, but we're growing crops and we're trading on world market prices against competitors, for example, in Brazil or in the States, where we import a lot of grain from,
yes,
who... you know, can use technologies that aren't available to Irish or European farmers.
Okay, so if the EU decided to ban glyphosate, that would put Irish farmers at an immediate disadvantage on the global market, you're saying?
It certainly would, yes. I mean, there's been quite a large move into non-inversion tillage, so that's not ploughing. And that is a cheaper operation than ploughing. It's quicker, so one person can grow more crops. But that's quite reliant on using glyphosate to control the green cover that you would have from the previous crop rather than ploughing it down.
Yeah.
You burn it off with glyphosate and then plant into it.
You mentioned there about Brazil. We import an awful lot of grain from Brazil to feed to our cattle, to put into meal, including soya, and that's controversial as well in the current climate. Could we not be growing some of those crops here?
We can grow. We obviously, it's difficult to grow soya in Ireland, because we don't have hot enough weather, really.
Right.
There are some varieties that may give us the opportunity, and some people have been trying. But certainly we can grow pulses. I guess the one that we grow the most of would be beans.
And so these would be supplementary proteins?
Yeah, they'd be pulse crops.
Right.
So, and the production of those has increased quite significantly in the last few years with support from the government. But it will be very difficult, given the current proportions that we have of livestock and tillage, to produce sufficient pulses to meet all of our requirements.
Will you answer me this, John, as an expert in the area? You know the way there's a lot of talk about beef farming now and about reducing the national herd and beef farmers not making money and people suggesting, well, if you can't make money, get out of beef farming, particularly in the west of Ireland where the land is marginal. And the farmer will say, OK, I'll get out of beef tomorrow, but what do you want me to do? Grow vegetables, grow, you know, crops. Is that possible? Is that a utopian solution?
I think, suppose it is a utopian solution. Now, that's not to say it's impossible, but if you know, we have less than 0.5% of our agricultural area in horticultural crops, and over 80% in grassland. So there'd be a massive increase in vegetable production, which would obviously outstrip demand. But also a lot of that land is not suitable.
So you'd only need, you know, a handful of farmers to get rid of the cattle and grow vegetables, and suddenly you flood the market.
You would, yeah.
Yeah, and we've 100,000 of those farmers.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think a lot of those farmers, we rely on people grazing cattle and grazing sheep to keep the countryside looking as it does. And, you know, for environmental reasons, but also for tourism and everything else. So obviously you don't want to go and plough the whole of the west of Ireland and plant cabbages.
OK, well, finally, John, what sort of a future do tillage farmers and does the business face in this country? The land base is diminishing. A lot of guys have got out and that land has gone back into dairying. What sort of a future do you see for them?
I think there's a reason. I mean, we need tillage. You know, we need a mix of land use. We can't be 100% grassland. I think what we need to do is perhaps try and develop higher value markets for our tillage produce, where the provenance, the quality that of Irish grain is recognised and paid for, and not continue to try and compete with imports from all over the world.
Right. Okay. So there's potential, is what
there's
you're saying.
Potential. Yeah.
A lot of potential, and of course, there's a lot of new technology coming on stream as well. And you're involved in a lot of trials down there in Carlow. John, it's been lovely having you in studio. No time is short, but do chat to us again, and let's hope that tillage farmers around the country do get a bit of a break through all this bad weather. But John Spink of Chagas, thank you very much indeed for joining. There are dozens of Saturday markets all over the country. You might be on your way to one today, but few can claim a history like that of Galway's Farmers Market, which has been trading every Saturday for centuries outside the 700-year-old St. Nicholas's Church. The open-air market is a feast of the senses, with fresh fish and shellfish, organic vegetables and fruit, cheese and eggs, Madras curry stalls, fresh donuts and much, much more. But traders are worried about the future. They have to contend with poor road surfaces, with puddles and flooding, and they recently found out that there are planned upgrades of pedestrian areas which will not extend to their area in Church Street. A delegation has brought their concerns to Galway City Council, as they told Lorna Siggins, who took a stroll through the market for Countrywide.
Probably out of pay. Oh, you're not. No.
Oh, yeah. I had a few of these. So my name is Cate Kern, and I'm an organic and biodynamic grower, and I've been working on the Galway market for the last 30 years at this stage. Pretty much one of the longest here at this stage, yeah. We do a full range of fruit and vegetable, and we grow quite a lot of stuff ourselves, and I also sell stuff for a number of other growers in the region as well.
King of the sea, fresh Irish turbot.
Oh my god.
I was not expecting this.
So Stefan, you have so many different types of fish here. And how long have you been coming?
Well, it's actually, this year is our 15th anniversary. Okay, we've had the license now in the Galway market for 15 years. We've got a very multicultural customers, a lot of Irish, Spanish, Chinese people, Asian, all around, and French people too as well, a few. They have access to this type of seafood, we're probably the only one selling in Ireland,
So Michael, tell me how long you've been coming into the market.
Between 15 and 20 years at the moment, I'd say, yeah. In that time, over the period, I started off with smoked salmon at the start, which myself and my family had a business doing. And about 15 years ago, we closed that off. And then I started doing oysters in the market, and I started doing eggs at the time as well.
And where do you get the oysters from?
Locally, mostly out around Mary. That's where mostly the beds are and all that. Now, if them beds are closed off, we also get them from different beds as well. Could be up around Mayo, or could be down over in Clearside.
And where do you get the eggs?
The eggs come from chickens. they have a house of their own, and they have an open field.
Happy chickens.
Happy birds.
My name is Dart Flake. I'm here in the market since 81. So 40 years next year, I'm producing organic vegetables. I've always been producing organic veg. At that time, it was a fairly small market. There was 8 or 10 traders here who kept the tradition of a very old market, which is probably going back 500, 600, 700 years. We hope to get another 500 out of it.
I mean, just look at those little mussels, Killary grown. And there are quite a lot of us local. You can get samphire here. You can get everything that you've ever dreamt about.
Yeah. Razor clams, cockles.
And the scallops. Yeah. And you get dillisk all over the place.
Yeah.
And of course, I love the small squid. Tiny ones.
I'm Ronnie Lally and I work here with Paddy Hogan every Saturday.
And how long have you been coming to the Galway market?
Here since I was 7 years of age and I'm 67 now. So I've made a lot of friends here down through the years. A lot of people have come and gone.
And were there live chickens here when you were coming here
live
first?
Live chickens, live turkeys, plucked chickens and hung along the rail in there so they did here every Saturday. All that's gone now. We joined the EEC and everything was all stopped, and HSE put a stop to all these elderly people coming into the market selling their little wares, and when they sold their stuff, the money they made was spent in the market.
You can tap,
So what did you buy here today?
I got the lovely chicken, breast chicken, and a little steak, one steak for my son. I have a student son still living with me. So hopefully I'll have him out of my way by the end of May. So I'm giving him lots of good steak from the friendly farmer. Thanks, Tommy.
Tony McCaig is my name. I'm from Ballinasloe. I'm here representing the friendly farmer and Castlemaine. Everybody wants, you know, you eat well. You wear what you eat. So people don't mind giving the few bob extra and getting quality. Do you know what I mean? That's what it's about.
So you have some issues with Galway City Council. Do you feel they appreciate the market here?
Well, we've been, I suppose, a bit frustrated in the last couple of years, particularly because we find it very hard to communicate with the City Council. The market, we feel, is pretty well neglected by the City Council, and we feel a lot of energy goes into producing a Christmas market for a month here in Galway, while the traditional market, which has always been here, has been neglected. We have a lot of flooding issues in the market, drains blocked and poor road surface, customers tripping on bricks, that type of thing.
And then some bollards arrived.
Yeah, actually some new bollards being put in all over the city, and again we're installed in the market without consultation with anybody, and there's some quite a bit of infrastructure going with the bollards that have just been put into trading places basically, and apparently cannot be moved, so some people will actually lose some space.
And you see regular faces coming in here,
presumably. Oh, yeah, the same customers all the time, the same customers every Saturday. And you get to know them and you get to know their problems and you talk to them, you know what I mean? It's not like a supermarket. Here we know everyone's problem, you know.
And that was Ronnie Lally, a long-time trader in the Galway Saturday Market, speaking to Lorna Siggins. And by the way, Galway City Council tell us that it fully recognises the value of the St Nicholas Market in the city, and after recent talks, it will provide a direct point of contact with the market stallholders and ensure notification of all works that might have a potential effect on trade. And thanks to all the traders who chatted to Lorna there. Now, as we mentioned earlier on, it is the busiest time of the year in Irish dairy farms, as it's spring calving season, with upwards of 1.5 million calves born across the country. But dairying faces many challenges, not least in complying with climate action targets, while also dealing with criticism from a small but very vociferous lobby who are just anti-dairy. For example, take a listen to Hollywood actor Joaquin Phoenix, who used his Oscars acceptance speech earlier this week to really put the boot in.
We go into the natural world and we plunder it for its resources. We feel entitled to artificially inseminate a cow, and when she gives birth, we steal her baby. Even though her cries of anguish are unmistakable. And then we take her milk that's intended for her calf, and we put it in our coffee and our cereal.
Well, Pat McCormick is president of the ICMSA. He's a County Tipperary dairy farmer himself, and he joins us now from our Limerick studio. Pat, good morning to you.
Good morning, Damien, and good morning to your listeners.
Yeah, and we'll chat about that little clip there in a moment, but a busy time for yourself too.
Yeah, without a doubt, typical of a dairy farm. Obviously, Kevin is underway 3 weeks at this stage. I suppose the last week has proved challenging from a weather perspective, but up to that, it was pretty good. Cows were out of grass and quite happy.
It must be very physically demanding on farmers, particularly older farmers. Are they fit for it?
Well, hugely challenging, but I suppose, you know, farming and the way farmers farm, excuse the pun, has changed over the last number of decades. Obviously, they've scaled up, but they've become very, very efficient as regards labour usage on farm and labour efficiency on farm. I mean, if you go back to when I was a schoolboy, calves were fed individually with buckets. At this stage, they're being fed on batch feeders and in a lot of cases, automatic feeders, which significantly reduces the labour that's required.
Yeah. Can you limit nighttime calving?
You can certainly aspire to doing so by feeding in the evening after your supper. And by that, I mean foddering the cows nearest to calving. Personally, I find that works quite well. And that when you get up in the morning, cows are more likely to calve than when you're going to bed at night. So that's the time when you want them, because obviously farmers need to maximise their time for recovery. And that, by that, I mean sleep.
Yeah. Now, this is going to be the busiest year, we reckon, for a long time with new calves, because, of course, the national dairy herd has increased since milk quotas disappeared. At your AGM in Limerick in December, the former Minister, Ned O'Keefe, said that, frankly, that unwanted male calves are being killed with lump hammers and plastic bags. Have you heard of this happening?
No, certainly I haven't. And, you know, if you were at the AGM, you'd have heard my response, because I said to the former minister or former junior minister, Ned, that, you know, lump hammers have no place anywhere, only on a building site. The reality of it is, and the Highland farm is typical of the farms that are out there, you know, where animals are looked after regardless of gender, and all animals matter. And, you know, irrespective of what sector of agriculture you're in, the margin is very, very tight, and you need to be selling everything that you can, and that includes the offspring. By that, I mean the male offspring.
Yeah, we touched on it earlier on about the value of the male calves in a dairy herd. Obviously, the heifer is more valuable. But there are figures buried in the Department of Agriculture's own AIM report in 2018 that there's a gap between the number of dairy female calves who die on farms with the number of male dairy calves. Is there a case that farmers are just not paying the same attention to the male calves? In other words, the percentage of male calves that die, you know, in the first couple of weeks of natural causes, or whatever you want to call it, it's much more than female calves.
I don't accept that. Certainly, I haven't come across that statistic. I mean, the statistics coming from the Department of Agriculture are that we have one of the lowest mortality rates in calves right across the EU. And, you know, on the vast majority of farms, calves are treated the very, very same, irrespective of gender, because they're reared by age rather than by gender, certainly up to 4 weeks of age. You know, and there has been a lot, and in particular in the autumn, there was a lot of talk about talking down the price of the dairy calf. And thankfully, I was at our local market in Tipperary on Thursday night, and I was pleasantly surprised by the demand that was there for calves, and in particular for strong calves. And, you know, again, Paul Hyland alluded to it, there's probably an obligation on dairy farmers to keep that calf maybe a week, 10 days longer, and to have him more saleable when he's moving on. And certainly farmers seem to be embracing that, and that has to be welcomed.
All right. So just to reiterate, you're not aware of baby male calves being euthanized because they're worth nothing?
No, certainly I'm not, Damien. And there's no place for it in our industry. And, you know, the dairy farmers, 100% of dairy farmers are part of the SDAS scheme that's coordinated by Borbia, the Sustainable Dairy Assurance Scheme. And, you know, there's a questionnaire within that. And there's a lot of propaganda out there about what could allegedly be happening on farms. But in a very, very short space of time, we will have data to back that up, right? Because we believe, you know, there is no place. It's zero tolerance, Damien.
OK, you just mentioned propaganda there. As a farmer, how do you feel about the way your business, your livelihood, what you do is being attacked right, left and centre? Like, have a look at Twitter, and there's a viciousness now against dairy from several angles: animal rights, climate action and anti-dairy campaigners. And that Joaquin Phoenix there, for example, with a captive audience of hundreds of millions is an example of this emerging narrative. Does this cost honest farmers and their families a lot of stress?
Oh, it's extremely disappointing. The man, you know, hasn't a grasp of what he's talking about, and we'll tackle exactly what he had to say, because I'm a DIY AI technician. I sit down at the start of every season and I select sires that are suitable for the particular cows in order to have an ease of calving. Nobody wants hardship, so AI from that perspective gives you a huge advantage rather than a broad spectrum. Equally, you know, we have a global population that's continuing to grow, and Ireland is one of the most, is the most efficient in Europe for a kg of milk solid production, and that, you know, is being lost in the figures that are bandied about being the highest per head of capita. The reality is we're a 90% export nation. Equally, if we weren't producing that milk, to be produced somewhere far less efficient for dairy production, and by that I mean far more climate damaging. And you know, if we're sure of anything about the climate, they mean tis a global issue, and we need to play to our strengths. And one of our strengths is that Ireland is a very, very efficient dairy and beef producer.
I know that, but the people listening will say, you know, farmers are paying lip service to the rest of us on climate by saying that, and then you're just ramping up production. Like, more cows means more methane, which means more emissions.
I don't accept that. You know, Tagus MET curve has been introduced. There's a significant number of low emission slurry spreaders out there on the ground for 2020, and you know, actually you have to wait 10 months in some production units in order to source your spreader. Equally, and you know, it was alluded to by the farmer, Mr. Hyland, that there's a lot of money invested in infrastructure on farm to become more environmentally friendly. I mean, how have we the quality of environment and the picturesque views and the landscape that we have? We have it because our forefathers protected the environment, and it's our ambition to protect the environment. And equally, there's nobody with more of a concern about water quality and environmental issues going forward than the farmer, because it has the potential to ruin their livelihood.
Well, then what do you make of the EPA report, which shows that water quality is deteriorating, and intensive agriculture, and when we talk about intensive agriculture, we're talking about dairying in the main here, that it is responsible. How do you respond to that?
You know, that's a very broad statement. Responsible, there's a lot of things responsible, and I think, you know, if the EPA were to be entirely neutral, they'd point the finger in a number of other significant areas.
Sure they are neutral.
The one thing I, as a farmer, and the farmers that I meet, and the generation of farmers that I represent, are very, very sure of is that we have to continuously strive to improve.
We export an awful lot of our calves, 200,000 of them, with bad weather. And remember, this happened last year. Obviously, ships don't sail. And that's another contentious issue, the whole live export trade, which, again, is coming into sharp focus, particularly at European level. How worried would you be if live exports were to be banned at some stage? What impact would that have on farming in this country?
Look, Damien, firstly, we had a presence in Cherbourg there last autumn where we saw the facilities that are in place for our animals when they go abroad for their rest period. And, you know, talking to the operatives, the Irish calf is coming in. While he may be travelling further than more, he's coming in far better condition, far better health, the conditions, and, you know, even the stocking density on the lorries has been reduced in order to increase their comfort. It's imperative that we keep live exports in this country. I mean, 2019 was dominated by beef talks, beef protests, and the one common denominator was that we needed competition in the market, and competition comes from live exports. And there is a demand out there. Our calves are delivering in the veal units in Holland, and they are well sought after.
Okay. Well, finally, Pat, what about milk price at the moment and the future, I suppose, for dairying in this country? Would you encourage young people to look at it as a viable business going forward? Or when you listen to the criticism and all the hurdles that have to be crossed, does it face a very challenging future?
Look, there are always challenges. I mean, when I started dairying, we were... in my own right, we were 7-8 years away from the abolition of quotas, and that was hugely challenging. The challenges that are there at this point in time are environmental. You know, as we move forward, we are well placed as an Irish industry to produce food to feed other parts of the world. There's a huge reputation out there and a regard for our product when it's exported, whether it's dairy or beef. And obviously, I suppose, one would say that people need to be cautious as they expand, and not to overstretch themselves at any time.
Yeah, and when you talk about that, just look at the success of Kerrygold butter, for example, on a global stage. Listen, Pat, it's great talking to you. Thank you so much for coming into the Limerick studio, because it is so busy. I'm going to let you home. You probably have a few new calves waiting for you when you arrive back to the farm there in Tipperary.
I was homesick listening to the Highland calves.
You want to get back to them. All right, thanks a million, Pat. Safe travelling. Thank you very much indeed. That's Pat McCormick there, who is the president of the Irish Creamery and Milk Suppliers Association. Now, nominations for the annual Farming for Nature Awards are open from now until the 31st of March. The initiative was set up in 2018 by a group behind the extremely successful Burren Life Project. Scientist Dr. Brendan Dunford is leading it.
Yeah, so Farming for Nature is this great initiative we started a couple of years ago with support from Bord Bia, Department of Ag and National Parks and Wildlife Service. And around this time every year, we look for nominations of farmers across Ireland who are doing great things for nature on their land. Now, a lot of farmers do good things every day, day in, day out, but we want you to help us identify those farmers across Ireland who are really, really doing exceptional work for nature on their land and who are willing to share their story with other farmers across Ireland as a way of inspiring them. So we've got great dairy farmers like Donal Sheehy down in Cork, Bright Boyce up in Donegal, who's a sort of a tillage and beef farmer. We've got our own Oliver Nagel here in Clare, who's a suckler beef farmer as well. So it doesn't really matter the size of the farm. It doesn't matter where. It just matters that the farmer is proud of his relationship with nature on the land and also proud of his livestock and his farming system and is able to express that in a way that will inspire others. Because I think if we want to change, like I said, farmers are the ones to initiate that change and farmers can inspire other farmers. So we're looking for those farmers across Ireland who are willing and able to do that. And we'd love to, I suppose, celebrate those people, say thank you for what you do. We're really proud of what you do. And we want your story to be shared amongst as many others as we possibly can.
Well, Gerard Walsh is a Farming for Nature ambassador who farms 85 acres of land near Moycullen in County Galway. And like other farmers, he operates in a way that enhances the life on his land, and it has worked. He's recorded the rarest butterfly in Ireland last March he's recorded the rarest butterfly in Ireland, the marsh frittery, on his land. Ella McSweeney went down to Galway to meet him.
So we're on the shores of the Corrib, are we?
We're near the Corrib here, I suppose a half a mile by the crow flies. We'd be on limestone land, so it's the same base as the as Loch Corrib. We're here in a townland of Ballycork, in Moycullen. Some of my farm is here. Actually, my ancestors came here in just after 1800. I can trace Walsh back to. It's a mixture of good grazing land, bounded by good limestone stone walls, a lot of kind of hazel woodland, regenerated hazel woodland, and some woodland going back, I suppose, over 100 years.
We're going to walk through some of this beautiful woodland. The sun is streaking through there. And we're looking for your animals, aren't we?
Well, they're Belted Galloway breed. They're a breed I brought in here about 10 years ago. Before that, they were Charolais, but I wanted an easier kept breed. I wanted a breed. They're lovely to look at. They're beautiful animals. So when you're farming part-time, looking at beautiful animals is part of it too.
And they're black with a white belt all around their middle. It's very sweet.
Black with a white belt. Their Galloway breed is a particular breed, but the belted variety have a big white hoop around their middle, around their belly and around their back with black at either end.
It really accentuates their tummy.
It accentuates their tummy indeed, yeah. And they are quite barrel-chested, and that allows them to eat more because they are kind of a breed of rough grassland. So having the big belly allows them to get more food in because it's less nutritious, so they have to fill themselves up with more.
Fantastic. Let's go through the gate. Tell me about your involvement with Farming for Nature and why you joined the initiative.
I was watching Farming for Nature for the previous year and looking at the nominations. And last year then I got a call from... I think it was my local heritage officer asking me would I be happy to be nominated, that Galway Heritage had been on to him. And I told him I would be happy. Bringing awareness to nature, in particularly in these marginal farmlands in the west of Ireland, is vitally important.
And having an initiative like Farming for Nature, what does that do for farmers?
It provides a centre of gravity, as to say. It provides something that you can realise that you're not just on your own, that there are other people, and that the Farming for Nature idea that comes out of the Burren, it provides a great opportunity to shine a light on nature, to shine a light on farming, to shine a light on a way of farming that engages with nature, that's positive for nature, that is in symbiosis with nature. I'll just check over here first. These animals haven't had silage all winter, but the other evening there, I left them a bale of silage and I haven't seen them since. So it's just to
what do you think happened
see
to them?
If they discovered this silage, and they may not have discovered it. I had them there was plenty of rough grazing for them, but with Storm Ciara coming in and some other storms there, I said I'd give them a bale of silage.
And this is like Hobbiton. It's amazing just to describe where we are. We're in a kind of a woodland. There's what looks like coppiced trees everywhere, covered in moss.
Yeah.
So that green moss is coming through. A big muddy path in the middle.
It's kind of temperate, like I think they call it some sort of a temperate rainforest here in the west of Ireland. I mean, there's lots of mosses and things that grow in woodland.
There's the silage. They haven't touched it.
They haven't touched it, no. So I just have to go somewhere else to find them.
So they haven't touched this, and you left this a few nights ago, did you?
Yeah.
So we'll go look for them again. What kind of trees are around us?
Well, this place here is predominantly hazel. It's called Sean's Wood, and my uncle Sean is about 86 years of age now. And he cut it one summer when he was home from school. And now it's come up into a hazel woodland. I see the cattle here above me.
Where are they? Oh, there they are.
Come on. Come on.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 adults, and then there's a little calf there. How old?
Calf's about 2 weeks old.
2 weeks old. And yeah. They're fluffy as hell, aren't they?
They've lots of hair on them, yeah. They've a double hair coat. So they've a kind of, if you had them in the crush now, you'd see that they've a kind of a fur underneath. Snow and things wouldn't melt on their backs. They're like an insulator. Cows selectively graze a lot of rough grasses. They take the grass away each summer, providing nitrogen into the soil and allowing the flowers then come on the following year.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because beef has got such bad press in the last few years. A sense that cows are the enemy, get them off the land, they're the problem. And yet, certainly in the Burren, but also here, what you're saying is that actually your land depends on these animals to produce the kind of nature that then you see.
It was amazing the level of diversity that came in after I introduced more cows into places that were undergrazed.
And you diversity of what? What did you find?
Diversity of orchids. I mean, in some of them places you have millennia grasses which grow up, form a thatch in the autumn, and that doesn't go away. So the flowers, it's like putting a roof over something. There's no light getting in, and therefore the flowers can't grow. You need the cows to come in to take the grass away to let the light in and let the flowers grow up. And you get lots of butterfly orchids, common spotted orchids, lots of different varied species of orchids. And each year I discover two or three. I have 5 books at home, and if I see a flower that I don't know, I come back and I look it up in the books and figure out what it is. And we just go down through this hazel woodland. And we'll go into an area which is actually a raised bog, or was originally a fen, and it's probably the most species diverse area on the farm, the most positive for nature.
So we've come out of the hazel wood into a beautiful area of bogland, wet, wet bogland. And the colours are greens and russet browns and yellows and mustard moss there and everything. This is pretty special.
It is pretty special, and in the summertime here you would have lots of different types of orchids, rare flowers, rare butterflies.
And you let the cattle out here as well, do you?
The cattle have full rein through this place. And even in the summertime, they don't affect the flower populations. Well, where we're standing right here now, I have an image in my head last summer of painted lady butterflies. I mean, butterflies as well as bees, insects full stop. But this area was populated with oxeye daisies and knapweed and devil bit scabies and lots of butterflies and insects. It was an absolute hive of insect activity here last summer. Just this patch we're on right now. And you can still see the stems of the knapweed still intact here, still standing. No matter where we're farming, we have to be conscious of nature.
And that was Gerard Walsh there with Ella McSweeney walking the farm in Moycullen. And anybody interested in knowing more about that, farmingfornature.ie is the website. And for the non-farmers out there, there'll be farm walks open to the public from March until October this year. It's a magnificent chance to meet these farmers who show you their land. And you can book it, as I said, on the website.